So a question that I have here is, what is the definition of orgasm?
So my definition of orgasm would be a peak experience. A peak experience of waves that build until there's a level of tension that the body can no longer handle. And the release of that tension is a pleasurable, kind of like rippling, diffusing sensation.
So much for taking the time to have this conversation with me. My podcast is about empowering motherless daughters to overcome their trauma, their childhood issues, and to, you know, what I normally say is let go of the past and embrace your blissful future. If you can just tell us a little bit about yourself, who is Katrina?
Who am I? Wow, where to begin? I'm 29 years old. I'm a white woman. I was raised like middle class Christian in a way that was like kind of intense. I would say pretty fear-based Christian. I'm one of five children. My mom had me when she was 21, I want to say, maybe 22. And yeah, I was similar to you. You were talking about how you think you're the you thought you were the only one with trauma before we started rolling. I actually didn't think that I had any trauma until I did. And then I saw it everywhere. And I've always been really interested in sexuality, mainly because it was such a taboo thing in my environment. I would babysit and I would go through everything, looking for like a tiny hint of sexuality. One time I found a condom and it was very exciting. Nobody in all of my babysitting clients had anything sexy hidden in their drawers. So I've always had a great curiosity for taboo, for like what I'm not supposed to have. Give it to me. I want to find it out. I want to be in there. So, and I've always also had a sense of justice, and that doesn't make sense, like putting my hand up, like the annoying kid in class for the teachers. So that combination of things led me to women's studies at university. I went originally to make art, and I was just kind of bored by how they were teaching me art. They were just giving me an assignment and I had to do it. And I didn't like making art for other people. But my women's studies class was the first time I've ever had a Black teacher ever, and was reading Black authors and was learning about like the intersections of oppression and how, you know, it was like we were like dumping all the shit in the world onto the table and being like, so this is really messy. How does it all fit together? And how do we listen to each other? And how are we going to make this work? And I was like, this is great. Like, I saw women be passionate in this way and it activated something in me as well. So then I just totally switched directions and I went into women's studies. And then I wanted to take all the weird classes, which ended me up with a degree in sexuality studies. First time I ever watched porn was in a university class and we were critiquing it. Yeah. And I was like, play it cool, Katrina, play it cool. Yeah. Yeah, I was watching like intense gay porn and we were talking about, you know, the dynamics, the power dynamics, and we're analyzing this. And I was like, okay, pretending that it wasn't the first time I had ever seen porn. And so I basically have been doing this for a very long time, seeking out aliveness, seeking out realness, and just breathing and figuring out as I go. I could talk forever about like how I got to be where I am, but that's, yeah, I have a degree in sexuality studies. I studied to be a midwife for a couple of years, delivered a bunch of babies, and then got married, stopped wanting to have sex, started dealing with my own trauma, and then developed a sexual relationship with myself, and then got really passionate about educating people on how to have a sexual relationship with themselves, how to be educated about these things and unashamed about who they are as sexual beings. And that's the work that I do now. Yeah, that's me.
Oh my gosh. Who would have thought that you can watch, first of all, at a university, you take a class. It probably was not a Catholic school, because I'm sure they will not teach, you know, such a thing. No. But to be able to watch it in the classroom and in an educational form, I feel like that is more empowering versus when you're sneaking around, watching it, being afraid, not being able to ask questions. I know when I was reading the Bible, you know, I read the Bible all the time. I love my Jesus, but I also like my sexuality, you know. But in the Bible, it says, you know, masturbation or self-pleasing, however you want to call it, it's not acceptable, it's a sin, blah, blah, blah. Initially, when this was like probably 2016, I had a goal in 2016 where I was like, I am going to figure out how to pleasure myself without anyone, like just self-pleasure, you know. And I remember, like, I felt so guilty, you know, for even having that thought in my mind, like, wait a minute, Zainab, where are you going with this? Why would you even want to do this, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was married at the time too, so it's like, hey, like, that's a no-no, you don't do such a thing. So
wild. And there's no mention of self-pleasure or masturbation in the Bible as far as I know.
Okay.
Yeah, there isn't. But that just goes to show you the trauma that happens, religious trauma, when words from texts are misapplied and mistranslated. Because there's a power dynamic there. When we're looking towards our religious teachers, we respect them the same way that we look towards our doctors, the way we look towards our politicians, all of these systems of power, right? And often that is wielded with not much consideration, and that's where people get hurt, because, you know, whatever was being said in the Bible about idolatry, for that to be twisted into like, don't touch yourself for pleasure, pleasure is wrong, that was never said. And when someone with power says something like that, do you know how many people that come to me that feel immense guilt around just being a sexual being? That is because these systems of oppression, and I'm really passionate about calling this out, because that stuff hurts us way more than anything else. Our orgasms happen in our brain. We get turned on in our mind. And the way that we've been taught about sex really affects our ability to be ourselves. So I'm really happy that it sounds like you got beyond that phase and you figured it out.
I surely did.
Yes, you did. And I mean, that really, to me, that speaks to the resiliency and the inner knowing that self-pleasure provides us. It's like,
yes,
we push through. Like, I should not feel guilty about this. Orgasm and self-pleasure is a way for me to connect to the divine, and there is a holiness and a purity to our sexual energy. And I think that's the really cool thing about self-pleasure. It's about like reclaiming your own sovereignty. And this isn't about seducing someone else. It's like getting clear on your own power dynamic, like you and you, what's going on here? You know,
be alone. And I get to know my body, you know, I have access to my body. I get to know me, you know, I'm like, how can someone experience pleasure when you don't even know how to give yourself pleasure? Like, how would you know what you like, what you don't like, if you don't take the time to get to know you? And sometimes, for me, it's not just even having an orgasm. It's just being sensual with myself.
Totally.
You know, just loving myself in a way. And just like, when I take a nice bath, for me, and I get out of the shower, like, I feel so sensual with my body, my movement, how I move, how I feel. For me, all of that matters. It's not, and there's nobody in the room, it's just me. And I feel so empowered, I feel so good, versus me waiting for someone to make me feel that way. I make myself feel that way. Not to say it's not okay for you not to have a husband, a wife, or a partner, no. But you kind of get to know yourself. Like, I love that, you know? So, okay, let me just, because you talked a lot about some stuff here. I know, because I got to, like, pause for a minute, like, whoa, wait a minute. Okay. So, you talked about trauma.
Mm-hmm.
What type of trauma did you experience? Because a lot of times people think trauma is just sexual, it's just like neglect, but people don't understand. I'm trying to educate people that there are different types of trauma, and it's not just the main ones that society kind of amplifies sometimes, but it's also like a child that goes through a divorce, you know, when their family goes through a divorce, is traumatic. Any event that can impact the trajectory of the person's life can be traumatic, whether it's mainly in a negative way. So what's your take on that, and what was yours like?
Yeah, so I would define trauma as an unprocessed emergency response in the body, okay? And so what that means is when something happens to you where you don't have control, when your power has been taken away from you. So it could be something really small, and we all experience the trauma of those situations where our power has been taken away from us. We're experiencing them differently. For example, 100 soldiers go to war and they see horrific things. 40 of them come back and only half of them have PTSD. What's that about? They just all dealt with the same thing. So the way our nervous system and our minds are coding events as traumatic or just like that was some hard shit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It depends person to person. And being one of 5 children, I've had to come to terms with that as well, because things that were incredibly hard for me are not hard for my siblings. And so you can end up making yourself wrong for what you're experiencing, or you can rationalize it like, oh, it's not trauma because everybody else is fine. But just know that if you're experiencing reactions in your body, that basically the way that trauma works is it's like a loop starts, it gets activated. So for example, I had really poor examples of anger. My dad was a really angry person and was kind of like yo-yo-like in his emotions. He just come out of nowhere. And then my mom had a very passive relationship to him. And so we all just kind of like dealt while he like lost his shit and was violent. And then he would go away. My mom would go away after him. And like, I don't know, I'm guessing talk it out. And then he would eventually come out and we'd all just pretend it was fine. We never acknowledged it, okay? So for me, when I'm around conflict that feels, or just arguments in general, that's triggering for me. And so the way that we survive our traumas they served us when we were, when those things were happening to us. But if we don't go through and finish the emergency response in our body has a way of like completing emergency responses. It's just that often we get interrupted in the process because it's not civilized or like not normal. So for example, like shaking violently, bawling your eyes out, the urge to like run away, like beat it really fast. These are all trauma responses. Some other ones that are more subtle and are so woven into what it means to be a woman. So we don't even realize we're in trauma response. So one of them is appease, where someone has power over you and you're afraid of them in some way, and you go to appease them. So for example, I can remember so clearly, like from childhood, I can hear like a conversation about to get like heated. And so then I would maybe like go make a snack and bring it in and then like be funny and entertain them kind of to diffuse the situation, okay? So that's an example of a trauma response, which is appease. So that means that whatever I was just dealing with in my own world, I automatically drop it and I serve whoever is the oppressor so that I will diffuse the violence. Yeah, big wow, right? So when we start digging into what trauma actually is, so many of us are in trauma response, like up to like 80% of our waking life. We're just reacting constantly. And it takes practice and actual nervous system capacity building, like actual things you can do to build your resilience and your capacity to catch yourself as those loops are being activated. And look at what's coming up and do the deeper healing work so that you can live your life from a place of creation instead of from reaction. So there's so many traumas that we've all had. And, you know, as I said before, I'm like a white middle-class woman. I have so much privilege. So the microaggressions that you probably deal with as a Black woman are like, I will never know what it's like. Like your nervous system is probably shot in a way that my nervous system never will be because of your identity. And that presents its own level of trauma, which when your nervous system is in an emergency response, you're not feeling sexy. This is why we have to like take a bath for half an hour before we can even begin to feel sensual, because our nervous system has to, our parasympathetic, like the chill thing, it needs to be able to activate in order for us to be able to get into a place where we can actually be sensual. And so this is what so much of my work is about, is it's the nervous system. Long answer.
No, that was perfect, because I've learned so much from that. What you just talked about in terms of like when you notice things are about to go down or go south, in terms of you and your father, you can feel this, you know, we call it a steam, like the steam is coming up, like he's about to get angry or upset, or he's already in the process. And it's like automatic. You just go to the kitchen, decide to make something to just kind of calm the situation down. That is your traumatic experience. And for some of us, we call that people pleasing.
And I think people pleasing is definitely a thing. And when we look at the deeper layers of why are we people pleasing, then we're able to have compassion for ourselves. When we're like, oh, I'm just a people pleaser, it's like, that's not who you are. That's your trauma making you think that that's who you are. And when we think like, oh, that's just how I am, there's also this thing that comes up like, oh, you just have to do better. Like you don't have self-control. Like just try harder to be nicer to yourself. Put yourself first, girl. It's like, I'm sorry, you've got to deal with your really intense trauma before that can actually shift, because otherwise you're working against a very deep animalistic system in your body that's just going to keep dragging you through that loop. So yeah, it's big work, and it's worth it.
I am so glad that I started the healing process for myself, because I was a very big people pleaser. I was either, it depends on who I was with, I was either like an extremely people pleaser, I was a, I don't even know the word to use for it, the opposite of it, based on who I was around. Mm. But mainly, I will always try to please people, especially in my community, because I wanted them to like me, but I never knew that that was my trauma. That was, you know, kind of, it's like a survival mode in a way. Like,
totally.
Yeah, it's, I was trying exactly to survive, it. You know, and I didn't have the ability to start the healing process. So all I did was, I thought in my mind, if I make you happy, that I am good. But the truth of the matter is I'm not.
Yeah, that the transactional kind of rest, like we have to earn just being safe. We have to earn the love that should be unconditional. We have to earn the respect. This is, I think, a function of intergenerational trauma, where our parents, who, you know, ideally your parents have done enough self-healing and growing up themselves before they have you, that they can see clearly. But that's a privilege that many of us do not have, is having healed, healthy parents.
Yeah.
Because our parents are surviving, you know what I mean? And so they're dealing with their own stuff. They're not parenting from a clear-headed place. They're parenting from their own trauma mind and their own animalistic, like, survival mode. And often that looks like, you know,
bad parenting.
Bad parenting. Getting kids to prove and, like, be good and controlling them. And, you know, it can look like a million different things, but
one,
yeah, people
is the narcissistic character. That is so big, because sometimes people think that a narcissist can just be mean and evil, but no, sometimes they can be loving. They confuse you. They make you think that you matter. They care for you. And these are some of the things that some of my audience members are experiencing, where they have narcissistical mothers. They have mothers that put so much pressure on them to be perfect. Mm. It's like the message that you're sending to that kid from an early age is that they are not enough. And so they grew up with not, I have someone I interviewed recently said that they were like the favorite child, the golden child, until they no longer were willing to be exactly what their mom wanted them to be.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden they became bad. They became, because they no longer served the narcissist.
The thing that's coming to me as you're saying this, is, I forget who said this quote, but it's like you'll either be liked or you'll be respected. And I think about family dynamics and how you're kind of stuck with your family, you know, infinitely, and how I think that my stubbornness around these things meant that I haven't been liked that much, but the level of respect is like rising infinitely, because I'm the only one in my family that stands up to my narcissist father. And that means that he doesn't like me.
Oh, no.
And that means that everyone else is kind of like, oh, do we still have to keep talking about this? You know, it's annoying. It's really hard being the strong one. And it, talk about nervous system capacity, to be okay with people not liking you. I think if you can build one strength as a woman to be okay with people not liking you will serve you so well. Like, learn how to masturbate and learn how to be okay with people not liking you. And you're good.
I think it's a goal of mine. I keep telling people, I am okay with not being liked at this point in my life, because now I stand for a lot of things that serve me and the people that I'm serving. So I am okay with not being liked. But once upon a time, I will literally have a panic attack if no one liked me. I will almost die.
Totally.
So I wish people would just get comfortable with being uncomfortable, with not being liked, not being favored. Because sometimes when people like you, I've learned it's because of what they can gain from you. It's not because of who you are. So what's the essence of that? Why care? And that's what I was like, I don't care anymore about people pleasing. I read a book called The Power of a Positive No. And I think that author, is by William Ury. And someone recommended that book to me. Actually, it was my therapist at the time. And I read that book. Oh, I went on a mission to just say no.
Yes. The power of no. Sometimes I get people to do that at workshops where I'll get them to like go around and ask each other for things, like physical things, like will you massage my back, or just like ask, like a consent sort of workshop. And then when people say no to you, you have to be like, thank you so much for honoring yourself, and give them like a positive response to no, because normally we don't have any positive experiences of people like being grateful for us being true to ourselves and saying no. You've done a great job at getting comfortable being uncomfortable, I'm sure, saying no over and over again.
I didn't have a choice. So yeah. I had to embrace it, and I'm still like doing it right now. Sometimes I ask people things, or I just put myself in a place where someone says no to me, just so I'm okay with it. I'm comfortable with it. And it's not an issue. And the same thing for me. Sometimes it's a struggle. I don't want to hurt someone, but I'm like, if I say yes to you, I'm saying no to me. So no. No to you, yes to me. That's how it goes. I have to walk myself through it in my mind. So a question that I have here is, what is the definition of orgasm?
Yes, I remember reading this. So my definition of orgasm would be a peak experience. A peak experience of waves that build until there's a level of tension that the body can no longer handle. And the release of that tension is a pleasurable, kind of like rippling, diffusing sensation. And that could happen in your pelvis.
Okay.
And the reason that you're able to build surface tension is because your erectile tissue, which if you're a woman, probably not likely, actually, been taught about your clitoris, and that's like where we would have an erection. But definitely look up, or you can find me on social media and look up erectile tissue. There's so much more than we've been taught. Women and men have the same amount of erectile tissue. So most people are familiar with men's erections. You have just as much erectile tissue in your pelvis. So that builds surface tension as it fills up with blood, and as you're stimulating that either directly or indirectly, you're going to be, so there's many layers of this that are kind of like doing the same thing, but as you're building tension, you're going to feel things in waves. And then that's just going to build, and if you can breathe through that, then you can and allow the waves to get bigger. You can breathe through them. This is another function of building your nervous system capacity. As we get more comfortable in the uncomfortable, whether it's someone being irritated with us or whether it's pleasure building in our body, if you can learn to be comfortable and breathe, like slow your breath down and like relax as much as you can, you'll be able to handle a lot more. If you could handle hard conversations, you're going to be able to handle more pleasure. Like your capacity for feeling, it increases across the board. So yeah, maybe instead of buying a sex toy, buy like a personal development book about like having hard conversations. It'll probably help your sex life. Buy both. You can interchange them.
I love that because people, they have so much tension within them. And I don't know, because they haven't dealt with it, they're not able to experience life, experience bliss, mm-hmm. experience pleasure because of all that tension that they have all bottled up and wrapped up. It's just draining mm-hmm. them. So, you know, start off with a self-development book and then you go the, you know, sexually, sensually developed book. Like, do what works for you. I just want people to do what works for them. I just wish people would just realize, like, I have so much power within me. You know?
Yeah. Women really are fiercely powerful. And I think that's why these systems, like religion, like
political system, whether it's religious, any kind of those institutional systems, like they just try to keep us at, they cap us, keep it at a certain length so we can just stay there and be that, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's why we've been sold such a surface level, cheap version of sex and why the shame keeps us small. As we sexually liberate and that like inner, like, I'm just fine with me, this is me, take it or leave it, that is an unmessable woman. And those women like shake shit up, like be scared of those women. And I think that's why that's not being taught to us, because the world will change so quickly and that wouldn't benefit the people who are creating those systems who have a lot of money and a lot of power. They would like to stay in control. So we'll just keep women thinking that they don't have any power and they can't change stuff. Yeah, it's, We gotta reclaim our sexuality. It's really important.
Yes, it is. So what does it mean to feel love for you? What does that look like?
To feel loved for you?
Yes.
What do you mean?
So a lot of people go through these like sexual experiences. Like I interviewed someone recently and they were like, when I was younger, you know, because of the traumatic experience that I had, she was sexually, you know, she had a sexual trauma. And so when she became as an adult, she thought that loved, you know, meant going from boyfriend to boyfriend or just doing whatever she wanted. So I always ask women, you know, certain women, what does, you know, to feel love mean for you? Like, what does that look like in a relationship outside of sex?
Okay, yeah. To me, love looks like being seen in my positive attributes and really like admired, and then also being seen in the places that I have to grow and being told those things with a lot of love, and then the person staying around to help me figure that mess out. So like loving the beautiful bits and also seeing and loving the beautiful parts and seeing and loving and sticking around to help me heal the parts that are maybe needing some work. So just being seen. And also like admired for the full humanity of who I am. You know, like I don't know how this came to be. It was like a friend was sharing a screenshot of a conversation that a guy friend and her had, and he was saying something like, you have like a heart of gold, you're the sweetest woman, and you're also like super bitchy around like this one topic, but it doesn't even matter because of, you know, X, Y, and Z. Like he like totally saw her as all of it and was just like, I like you. And something about that really clicked in me where I feel like, and maybe this is my Christian upbringing as well, is I'm always trying to do good. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to be a good person. Because for me, the type of Christianity I was raised in was that I'm inherently evil. I'm born in sin, and without Jesus, I'm evil. And so for me, there's this like inner sense of like always trying to prove and earn like being good. And recognizing that holding myself to like these insane standards is one, exhausting, and two, like having to pretend that I'm not human and that I don't have my faults, also exhausting. And the fact that someone can be like kinder, you know, and just have realistic expectations and be okay that, you know, I leave all the cupboards in my kitchen open, but it doesn't matter because they love how creative I am. You know, like this sort of, I guess the like wisdom in accepting the paradox that I am. Like I want to be seen and appreciated for all of my facets. If that's not too much to ask.
Yes, all the areas of you, you want to be seen and accepted as a whole. And I mean, I think that as a woman, that's what we all strive for, is to be seen and accepted and appreciated. Appreciation goes such a long way, and people don't, it's like so comforting to be appreciated and to be seen with all your flaws and still somebody loves you and know that you are a work in progress. My gosh. You just let all me, like all my security just fell, like it just fell down, and I'm no longer guarded. I am free with you.
Ugh, that is the sexiest, I think. Right? To just be able to drop your guard and to know that they can handle like the weird stuff that comes out in between. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh. Being a woman is so amazing. So you do this dance routine, which I have seen a couple of times on Instagram, okay? Now, okay. I used to dance. I mean, I still dance, not even used to. I still dance like when I'm cleaning or I'm doing like anything in terms of like my house. I will always like play loud music, or I'll have my AirPods in and I'll just go to town and I'll just jam by myself. But I didn't know that was therapeutic. I knew I felt better, but it never clicked.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It's so therapeutic. If you look at like all indigenous, like if you looked at anyone's ancestors, self-care has really been like commodified and turned into, so like, I don't even know how many billions of dollars it is as an industry. But, you know, sing, dance, shake, laugh, like, and maybe have sex. Like, these are the things that, and go outside. Those are.
Yes, vitamin D. You need that.
Yeah, like, before you freak out and think something's wrong with you, like, are you getting enough sleep? When was the last time you danced? When did you sing? Have you drank water today? Like, it's very, our bodies are so intelligently designed. Dancing is amazing.
That would, oh my gosh, I love that. Have you drank water? Did you dance? Did you sing? Did you go outside before? Because, you know, this is how people stay in depression. They assume everything is, you know, some people do have real depression. Let's not get that twisted. However, sometimes all you need to do is go outside. Like, I love the parks. I go to the park. Now, they have snakes there. I don't really like them because I keep coming across them. But I still go anyway. But I will go to the park where I am prior to going. I will be so upset about something. But by the time I leave the park, probably in an hour or two later, I will either have like the solution or not care. I have a fuck it bucket. It's cool. Yes. So either I will come home and put it in my fuck it bucket or I would find a solution. It's one of the two.
That was amazing. Yeah. And I think that's just part of growing up as well, is like, as long as you keep trying new things, you're going to find the things that work for you. Like, sometimes I really don't want to go outside, and I've had like a terrible week. Like, it's been a week of not going outside. And it's like, all right, Katrina, you're going to listen to a podcast and you just walk. It's going to feel shitty for like the first 20 minutes at least. And then something's going to change. It always does. And like, we have to give ourselves pep talks like this.
Oh. All right. So you did talk a little bit about emergency response earlier. And you did talk about how it affects our bodies. So you don't really need to go into that. That was my next question. Now, what is the G-spot and where can we find it? Because, you know, a lot of people don't know where that is.
This is an audio show, right? Like, in people's ears, not on video.
No, it's both audio and video.
Oh, okay, great. I would have put on, like, some lipstick for the occasion. Hello, everyone. But I will, I'll grab my model for a second.
Yes.
Okay, so if you're listening to the audio, I'll try to describe it accurately enough that you don't need to watch the visual, but it will be an aid. So this is the female erectile network minus the G-spot, which is also erectile tissue. So erectile tissue is characterized by blood is able to go into it, and then it gets held in it so that it expands. Usually that's not the way the rest of our tissues work. So our nipples are like this, and same with our clitoris. So this would be like the very tip of your clitoris. This would be what we're taught about, okay? You have a shaft of your clitoris that goes underneath of your clitoral hood, which is like covered. And this, the top of it, it's connected to your pubic bone by a little ligament. So if you're watching this or listening to this and you find your pubic bone with your one hand and then just go down, and if you kind of move side to side over it, you're going to feel what feels like an elastic band almost like underneath of your fingers. I'm doing it right now. And yeah, try it. Well, give me a moment to find it. Yeah. Okay.
And elastic band. So my bone, I go.
Pubic bone middle, and then just go just slightly down. On my jeans, so it's a little hard, but yeah. And if you go back and forth, you're going to feel almost like there's an elastic band like underneath of it that you're skipping across. Do you feel that?
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay. So because they don't teach us about our erectile tissue as women, most women are completely disconnected from this whole network, because in order to know about things and in order to feel them in our body, our brains need to have visuals, and our brain needs to be connected to that part of our body. And having visuals and having names for things is really important. Just like, let me think of like another part of your body. Like, if you've ever been looking at the anatomy of a breast, for example, and then like, I don't know, sometimes like boobs feel like more lumpy than others.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of like feel the shape of them, and you're like, oh, I think I'm just feeling, those are my milk ducts. And you can like literally feel like, oh, those are my milk ducts. If nobody ever taught you about any of the anatomy in your breast, you'd just be like, what's that? Like, it can be kind of confusing, right? And so for a lot of people, when they have their hands on their genitals, they're just kind of confused. Like, well, what's that? Most women have never looked at themselves in a mirror. I highly recommend you do that.
What?
Yeah, you're shocked that people haven't looked at themselves in a mirror?
Yes.
Are you? Yes. Well, a lot of people are afraid of what they're going to see. So I lead this workshop called Body Sex, where it's like an experiential sex education experience and also a sensual education experience. I teach people how to turn themselves on. And we look at our genitals in a mirror in this workshop. It's a nude workshop. And always, the day before the workshop, women are super nervous, obviously, because they're about to do something big deal. And there's always one or two women who pull me aside and they're like, I looked this morning because they wanted to make sure nothing was wrong before they show the group. And they're like, and I think something's wrong. And either women think they might have an STI or they think they have a growth or they're concerned about something because they have no idea what their sense of normal is because they don't have a relationship with looking at it. Let me tell you something. There is no universal normal when it comes to genitals. There's only normal for you. And no doctor, no sex coach, no person can look at you and be like, yep, you're normal, check. Because that might not be a normal thing for you. You need to have like a relationship with over time to know what is normal. So if you've never looked at yourself in the mirror, I highly recommend you do that. So you've got the shaft of your clitoris and then the glands at the end. And then you've got these bulbs. So the urethra goes just in a kind of at the crux here, a hole like into the body. And then, so if this is me, like, if this is a woman who's like sitting down, this would be how her. So the bladder sits inside the pelvis right here, okay? And there's a little tube that comes down. So it's like my hand is the bladder and my finger is the urethra. And it comes out right there. And then the vagina is the opening underneath of it. So the urethra makes up the roof of the vagina. It's like two holes are stacked right on top of each other. So they share a wall, okay? And the urethra, here we are, it has glands around it. And it's wrapped also in a tube of erectile tissue. So it also gets erect. The way that women's erections work is that tube around the urethra, it tends to fill up with blood last. It gets engorged last. So you need to be really turned on. And for most women, that process of from arousal to full erection takes about 20 minutes. I don't give myself that much time, and I can still have an orgasm using not my urethra. It's technically called the urethral sponge. Okay, so you can use the rest of your the more external erectile tissue to have quicker orgasms. But if you want to be having internal orgasms that feel amazing, you need to take enough time so that they're actually erect. It's like a flaccid penis can't have an orgasm. It's not going to feel as good. Yes, it feels nice to touch something flaccid, like comforting and gentle and whatever, nice, but you're not going to have an orgasmic experience. So you need to get really turned on, and filling your erection up with blood does not look like putting things inside of it and moving it around. For most people, that's not what fills up your erection. What fills up your erection is your pelvic floor muscles contracting and relaxing, contracting, relaxing, contracting, relaxing. Just like if I wanted to fill my bicep up with blood, I would squeeze, and then there'd be so much more vascularization, right? This is how our bodies work. So when we're super passive sexually and we're just like laying there doing nothing, not engaging anything, we're going to have weak erections, because our pelvic floor isn't doing anything. So if you want your erectile tissue, especially your deep erectile tissue, which the G spot is named after this Dr. Grafton, I forget his name. It's named after this piece of erectile tissue that's wrapped around the urethra that has glands also attached to it that release more secretions, and this is where female ejaculation comes from. Take lots of time to get turned on. Work on the external. Work on like grinding and humping something. That's what's going to give you like the biggest erection. Okay, there's a reason why we intuitively want those things, and why like 16-year-olds are like grind level pro. And that's why they're like feeling so turned on, is because they're working for it. Yeah, they're taking their time. Well, maybe not that much time, but I had a lot of time when I was 16. I would make out for like hours until like my lips were bruised, you know? And then at that point, like when you're that turned on, it doesn't take much to reach orgasmic state. So yeah, be curious, get to know your body and take your time with it. And grinding is the most underestimated sex act. So yeah. Wow. Yeah, that was a lot of sex ed for you there, but I feel like you can't really talk about one part of the erectile network without addressing the rest of it. So the bulb, the legs, this is like the main powerhouse of erectile tissue, and you want to get it fully fluffed up. And once this is fluffed up, then that the erectile tissue around the urethra, which is known as the G spot. And this is another thing with like with language. It's called a spot, which makes no sense, because if I think about how to stimulate a spot, I would like touch it and like maybe do circles, yeah, and stuff. But it's a cylinder. It's a tube of erectile tissue wrapped around a tube. So how would you touch a tube? If you know that you're touching a tube, that connection between your brain and the tube is going to be so much more clear, because you know the shape of what you're touching. It's going to be easier for you to explore it. Yeah, so names matter. G-spot, I feel like it's called the G-tube.
So as you were talking, all I thought about was, I remember as a kid, I think I was like maybe 9 or 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother on my father's side wanted me to do the circumcision, the female circumcision. Thank God. My father said,
wow.
No way. Yes, because you know, I'm originally from West Africa. So my father said, no way, you cannot do that. You cannot do that to my daughter. So that's how I got out of it. The question that I have for you is, the women that have had their clits cut, are they able to experience orgasm?
I think depending on what type of circumcision you've had, it's going to be different. So I know there's different types, different degrees of what gets cut off. And that's going to be an incredible trauma, like, from a physical standpoint.
So wait a minute, I didn't even know that they have different types of the female circumcision. I just thought it was just they just cut the whole thing off.
Well, see, this speaks to like, what's the whole thing? So there's types where, I won't get super into it because I don't feel well qualified to speak about it. I just know there's different degrees of it, of how much of typically the shaft of the clitoris and the hood of the clitoris that are being removed. You have all of this, you have the bulbs and the legs, which would usually not be removed because those are in those are embedded in the pelvic floor, and they're usually not doing that. I think sometimes they remove the inner labia, parts of the inner labia, which that would also just be a huge trauma, because these are this is a vulva, okay? And so this would be the shaft of the clitoris underneath the hood. You can see maybe just a tiny little bit, the tip of the glands. So if you pulled the hood of the clitoris back, you would see the glands, and it looks like pearly. That's why they call it like polishing the pearl, because it has like a different quality to it than say the hood or the inner labia. Okay. So if this superimposed is underneath of all of that, like right. underneath. These bulbs are also underneath, kind of hugging
right.
the vaginal opening, which if you opened this up, you would see, and then also the urethra, okay? So when these get super fluffed up, the inner labia and the outer labia also are going to get super fluffed up. And these become super sensitive on some people because of the erection that's happening underneath. So when we get cut, wherever we're getting cut, so for example, I had a hernia surgery when I was 16. So on my pubic bone, like kind of in my pubic hair, there's like a 3.5-inch scar. And when that surgery happened, I couldn't feel like anything on the right side for years. Like if I got like a bikini wax, it was like I almost couldn't feel anything on the right side. So I think they messed something up there, to be honest, because I don't, it shouldn't be like that, I don't think. But there's so much, the way scar tissue works is it's protecting, and it's like tougher tissue that feels like weirdly numb and pins and needly. And so often we just avoid touching it, and that it just gets harder. And so working with scar tissue, there's people who specialize in working with scar tissue. There's so much sensation that can be reclaimed through working through the scars, because you can soften those scars by working through them. And the way that scar tissue works is it's fascia, like condensed connective tissue that has oozed out, kind of like an inner spider web that kind of like holds everything together. Yes, you know what I'm talking about? Okay. So the fascia, because it's so dense, it's not innervated the same way, and blood can't flow through it because it's so dense. So if you get work done on the scar tissue to break it apart, you can restore a lot of sensation. So I would look into someone who does scar work, someone obviously that you trust, if you've undergone general mutilation or general surgery of any sort, and you've got scars that are hindering your feeling. I do not think that prevents orgasm. I think every single body can have an orgasm, even if you were paralyzed from the neck down. Studies have still shown that you're able to have cervical orgasms because the cervix has 3 nerves that go up to your brain, whereas this system just has 1 nerve that goes up to your brain. So orgasms are happening when your brain is being lit up. And I really believe that everybody can have an orgasm. It might take some work.
That is good to know, because I believe that is one of the reasons why they do it in Africa, is because they don't want the women to have pleasure or to do anything outside of their husband. It's like a way from what the little bit that I researched when I was in high school, it's like a way to prevent the woman from being promiscuous. You know, that's one of the reasons why they do it, because then they won't have the craving. They won't crave sexually for anything, like, you know.
Of course, because you've been violated tremendously, and
that's so,
there would be so much self-protection around that reclaiming that would just be a tremendous amount of work. And I have no idea what that experience is like, and I just have so much respect, and thank you for bringing it up, because I'm going to do some research on it so I can see if there's anyone specializing in this so I can refer people.
Yes, because you might get people. So is there an age where women stop experiencing orgasm?
My gosh, well, my teacher is 91, I think, this year, and she still have an orgasm. Yeah, or you can have orgasms until you die.
91?
Yeah. Dr. Betty Dodson. She's 91 this year. They call her the mother of masturbation. She's incredible. Yeah. Yeah. There's no end in sight, ladies. Yeah. I've seen her have an orgasm. It's legit.
A lot of times they talk about the size of the penis and a male partner. And one time I had a conversation with one of my girlfriends and she was talking about how that whole thing is overrated. And she's like, oh my gosh, like sometimes with my husband, I experience like multiple. And I'm like, oh, okay. This was like a couple of years ago. So my question is, does it matter? Do you have to? Because I've even seen somewhere else where a person did a video and said it doesn't matter. But why is there such a big thing about the size of a male's part?
Wow, I think it's really easy to externalize our frustrations and to blame them on different things. And there also is just like very specific desires. You might be really into really big cock. And if that's what you like, then either find a partner who has one or buy a dildo that is like that. I mean, shout out to all the lesbians who have shown us that we don't need anything attached to a body. I enjoy being sexual with both. And I think the thing that, and I haven't had penetrative sex with a partner in over a year, right? I feel very sexually satisfied. You can either get a partner that has the shape of genitals that you enjoy the most, so that that is attached to the person you love the most, and then the other things that you desire, because I don't know about you, but I don't like the same thing every time, which is why having tools and devices to explore your body is where it's at. And if we think about the pressure that puts on our partner to deliver a certain sort of thing in order for us to have pleasure, the same way that we want to be able to drop all of our guards and just be who we are, whatever might be coming to the table, let's serve up the same freaking kindness and allow them to show up with an erection or no erection or a halfway erection and figure out how to have fun between the two of you with what you've got. Like, if you've ever dealt with illness or disability or like life changes, and when we get really like stuck on things needing to be a certain way, oh honey, I think you're going to be tested in that attachment. So I would really get used to being creative. Like, I mean, I've reached for a cucumber in desperation in my youth, you know. Like, many things can work, my friends. And you know, there's so many different avenues of sexuality that you can explore. Like, energy sex is a really important thing for me a couple of years ago that I got into. Now I can like have orgasmic experiences meditating with like water or a tree or the sunset. Yes. So you do not even need to be touched in order to have an orgasm. Okay. So just know that that's possible.
That is true, though, thinking about it, because I don't have any toys or anything. I just never bought them.
Oh, you should definitely have fun. I mean, if you've got the budget for it. The first sex toy is lube, like, and that can be in your kitchen, like a little bit of olive oil, coconut oil, like, yeah. Any like edible oil is great. Just start with that. Start with that. That's the first step.
So just before I let you go, I want you to tell the women that are listening, how can you help them and a little more about your sessions.
Yeah. So the thing that I really help people with is finding your own sexual self-expression, the same way that, and women often think that they don't know what they want. And I used to share that belief that I didn't know what I wanted. But if you even just look down at your body right now, you chose what to wear today. You chose how to do your hair or not to do it, that amazing shade of lipstick that you have on, right? We have choices, like the chair that we bought to sit in, the apartment that we've chosen to live in. We know what we want. And this story of not knowing what we want is bullshit, okay? We have preferences. And it's really easy to just say like, oh, I don't know, so I'll just be like apathetic. Stay in it and stay curious. So that's what I help people with, is to make self-pleasure a practice. I rarely get hit with like horniness. I have to cultivate this. I show up to pleasure as a practice. I focus my intention on pleasure like a practice. And from that, I have discovered a wellspring, wow, so much energy available to me. Being able to activate passion, being able to connect, which is really such like a life-giving experience, to either be able to connect to myself, to connect to my environment, like I was talking about energy sex, or to connect to other people. So this is what I help people with, is finding, how do you do that? And I guide you through an experience online. If you, I work one-on-one with people in person, not very often. And as you can imagine, this is very vulnerable work, and I do a lot of writing as well, so I don't have a ton of time for one-on-one sessions. So the best way to do this work is to do it online. So Body Sex Online is a 2-hour and 45-minute ritual that guides you into sex education so you can learn about your body and then also how to create a self-pleasure practice. And you can find it on my website at katrinamarie.com. You can read all about it. And yeah, like we were talking about earlier, the power and the deep sense of rest when you stop apologizing for being who you are is just, it's like soul altering. So yeah, that's how you can work with me. And yeah,
I would definitely be putting all your information below, including your Instagram as well as your website and your email. So
people, yeah, I'm the worst at email, as you can probably attest to, having to message me on Instagram, be like, did you check your email? So definitely the place to reach out to me is on Instagram, and you can find me at My Orgasmic Life.
Yeah, I am just so appreciative of this conversation. I know some people are like, oh my gosh, it sucks. But it's not even about that. And I wish people can walk away. My goal is for them to walk away feeling empowered about their own sexuality, their own body, you know, to embrace themselves and know that it all starts with like embracing yourself and being unapologetically you. You know, it's like the foundation of just like figuring out who you are and be open-minded to so many things. Cause in that I have learned a lot about myself, what I like, what I don't like, who I want to be around, how I want to be satisfied, you know, that kind of thing. And just be okay with you. And if that means that you like to have orgasm a couple of times a week on your own, that's your business. And don't feel guilty about it.
Enjoy.
There is one question I have to ask, and that has been on my mind. When I was working at the bank, I had a coworker that I was working with, and she said every time she had an orgasm, she felt nauseous.
And this is common.
It is?
Yeah, I wouldn't say like it's like half people have it, but I've heard this question, I hear this question regularly. Someone just messaged me last week saying that she feels like she has to vomit after every time she has an orgasm. And so I need to do some more research on this, because I haven't. But she said that she also feels that way when there's like a lot of adrenaline going through her. So she thinks it's like a hormone association. People are so different. So if that was happening to me, what I would do about that is I would get really curious about the moment before orgasm, because that's when your subconscious is like really open. What do you think about right before you're about to have an orgasm? I would look into like aftercare for yourself. How are you having an orgasm? Like this is such an, I would need so much more information to help tell someone why that's happening to them. But that sounds like a nervous system response, and it could also be a hormonal response in the body. But yeah, we all work in different ways. We all have little quirks, you know? Like some people get pregnant and then their hair is like curly after it's been straight their whole life. And they're like, well, that was a surprise. Like bodies are so wild. I don't think I would want to feel nauseous after every orgasm. I've had experiences of that that have been like really intense and maybe not like led by my desires. I've had this in cases where I've been kind of been in a more submissive position, and the energy of just like receiving and not being in control has made me feel nauseous. I would journal about it. If you have a therapist, talk to your therapist about it. And if your therapist isn't down to talk about sex, find a new therapist, because sex is part of being human and you should be able to talk about sex with your therapist.
I haven't seen her since 2006, but I've always thought that was like so different. I remember it was a group of girls when she said it, and then everybody just looked at her. So it just stayed with me. So when I was doing I was like, oh, I gotta ask this question. Like,
yeah, you are not alone if you feel nauseous after sex. And the reason why it's happening is probably completely unique to you.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to educate us on this topic that is like a taboo, no one wants to talk about. It's like a type of situation, you know. So thank you so much. If there's anything that you want to leave my audience with, now would be the best time. Or another thing you can leave them with is your one word to empower women that have experienced trauma and they're trying to heal. What is your one word of empowerment?
Kindness. Yeah, be kind to yourself. And three more words, trust the process of your healing.
Yeah. Yes, I love that. Thank you so much. I really
appreciate this.
The whole goal here is to empower women, and it's not just about healing, you know, a specific trauma, but it's all type of trauma and gaining that power back. And I hope this will get them moving to, for the ones that have experienced sexual trauma, to just get in touch with who they are. And for the ones that haven't, just get to know who they are and what they want.
Yeah, I love that.
But again, thank you so much. I will keep
you're welcome.
I will keep you posted, and you will
perfect.
Know when it will be put out.
Perfect. So nice to connect with you. You're a great interviewer. That was fun.
Thank you so much. I'll be in touch.
Okay, bye.
All right, everyone. I hope that you have enjoyed this episode. If you love this episode, please, please, please share it with someone in need of healing. Share it on all social media platforms or just plain old text messages, okay? Subscribe to our newsletter, follow us on Instagram, join our Facebook support group page, and subscribe to the YouTube channel at The Zainab Kanu Show. Thank you for all the love and support. Until next time, be so good, be so kind, be so patient, and be so loving to yourself. Like, how did the relationship turn? Help me understand here. How did it, your perception changed of her?
Okay, so for me as a person, naturally, I am someone who is very forgiving, naturally. And because I have the fear of God, I try as much as possible. Nobody can be perfect, but I try my best to do the things that God says that we should do. One of such is loving people, loving those who are wicked to you, who are bad to you. Find a way to love them. And then for me, this is one of the things that have given me the strength. Just, you know what, you don't have a choice here. If you want to go to heaven, if you want to be right standing with God, you have to forgive people. So for me, I'd rather forgive you than to not be in the good books of God.